Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Big Sports Breakfast Summer Edition this Monday, the 17th of January. What a summer of cricket it has been for the Australian cricket team, trouncing the old enemy England in the fifth and final Ashes Test last night, winning by 146 runs, and the series also 4-0, unearthing future Test stars and revitalising the careers of some others as well. What a series it's been. We're up and about this morning, as I say, good morning to Jamie Rogers and Adam Pengelly joining us this week. Good to talk to you both, and good morning.
Yeah, good morning, boys, and good morning to all of our listeners. Hope everyone had a great weekend, and what a great way to start the week with the Ashes series win in, well, overall, but in Hobart. That was just incredible. I didn't see the end. I had to go to bed to get up early for this morning, which absolutely killed me, which is one of the reasons why I said during the week I prefer when it's just the red ball so that we can watch it all day. But just outstanding. Cameron Green, Travis Head. I just loved watching all those boys.
Morning, Jamie. Morning, Ryan. Morning, everyone at home. I was just saying off air, I went to bed, Ryan, when Ben Stokes was dismissed. I think England were 4 wickets out, and I thought, okay, will they make it through to stumps? And I thought they probably would. You sort of had the feeling when Joe Root and Ben Stokes were in, there was still some sort of chance, wasn't it? But once those wickets started coming, they came very quickly. And 2 3-day test matches we've had in this Ashes series, quite remarkable, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I mean, England were none for 68. They were pursuing 271, which you thought was gettable. But as you mentioned, Jamie, it was Cameron Green who did all the damage. He knocked over the top three batsmen, Rory Burns, Dawid Malan, Zach Crawley, either side of tee. And then there was just an avalanche of wickets, 10 for 56. That's quite extraordinary. In fact, that's the biggest collapse that England have had since 1948 in an Ashes series. It's extraordinary. But when you think of our bowling lineup, we didn't even bowl Nathan Lyon, which just goes to show how strong our lineup was. So Pat Cummins, the captain, finished with 21 wickets for the series. Mitchell Starc, 19. Scott Boland, 18. And we've got to bear in mind with Boland, only, you know, a couple of test matches. He got Joe Root 4 times. Travis Head was named man of the match and man of the series. And that's amazing considering that he missed Sydney through COVID. So really, it's just across the board a comprehensive performance by Australia during this Ashes series.
Yeah, and when you look at a player like Cameron Green, I think he's now the complete package as a test all-rounder and can really spearhead Australia moving forward. And at the start of the series, he had no test wickets to his name and he's now got 14. And as you mentioned, he took those top three batters on either side of tee that sparked that avalanche of 10 for 56. And Travis Head, I think when you look at him, he is definitely the present and the future of Australian cricket. And I just loved watching him on day one in Hobart. When he came to the crease, it was a menacing green top with England's bowlers firing. And that's when he came out and hit a century and deserved that man of the match and man of the series honours. And it's just so exciting to watch such a great crop of athletes coming through.
And a really good sign, Ryan, for Australian cricket is that a lot of the guys who stepped up in this series, their position's probably a little bit of doubt at the start of the series. Remember that talk about Travis Head? Will they pick Travis Head at 5? Will they pick Usman Khawaja? They went with Head and that decision was vindicated, obviously. Scott Boland's just come from the clouds. He's an experienced cricketer, but to come in and play his first test on Boxing Day and the impact he's had in 3 tests has been quite remarkable. And then, as you mentioned, Cameron Green, like, surely he's got to be the most exciting cricketer Australia's produced for many, many years.
Yeah, and whilst it has gone perfectly as far as the results are concerned for Australia, when you think about it, it probably hasn't been the perfect setup. We had a new captain ahead of this series in Pat Cummins. And, you know, obviously a lot of weight was on his shoulders. He missed the Adelaide test through COVID. Travis Head missed. But the players that came in were terrific. Let's talk about guys like Michael Nisa, Jai Richardson, Usman Khawaja revitalising his career. So those, I guess, potential banana skins weren't. And even more so, the people that came in didn't just fill in admirably, they went to another level.
Absolutely. And the question now is with Scott Boland. We need him. He needs to be in the Australian side. So no doubt he'll be playing in Pakistan when they go on tour in March. It's almost like he has cemented himself in the side.
By their lofty standards as well, Steve Smith and Dave Warner had pretty lean series, to be fair, only averaging in the 30s. I know Warner had a good start to the series in the first 2 tests, but
then got a pair.
He made a pair in Hobart, was quite remarkable. And Steve Smith is not the infallible Steve Smith we've seen in the past, is he? Hasn't made a test century for quite a while now. I think he's only made 1 test century in his last 25 innings. And yesterday, I must admit, that was quite a strange dismissal for someone like Steve Smith. You'd see that England had set the trap, didn't they? They put 3 men on the fence and said, well, the only way you're going to get out is by hooking. and taking it on, and he obliged, and he did. So for Australia to have guys step up in the absence of Smith and Warner really dominating things, a great sign for the future of Australian cricket.
The question marks, I guess, that we will take out of this series is the opening partnership. How does it look, not just for the tour of the subcontinent, but how does it look for the future? You know, then we've also got issues with Alex Carey as wicketkeeper. Look, not a bad series, but also not a perfect series either. And the big one, Justin Langer, the coach. So he's now presided over a T20 World Cup and an Ashes series victory. And yet the topic this week will turn to, will he keep his job? It's extraordinary.
Well, did you notice the tone of Pat Cummins's comments about Justin Langer just changed fairly significantly for this test match? He was asked a question straight after they retained the Ashes and won the series in Melbourne. He said, oh, now's not the time to talk about it. Let's just worry about, you know, celebrating the victory. But he was asked after day two in Hobart thoughts about Justin Langer's future again. And he was quite explicit in saying that we love having JL around. We love having him around. He's been great for this group. So I don't know whether something's happening in the background the last couple of weeks that might have smoothed the waters a little bit more, but it's a huge call for Cricket Australia to make, because I mean, massive if he leaves this setup after what's happened in the last few months.
Yeah, and Jamie England. Look, what a disappointing series. And I think that last hour or two last night showed why England need to really review what's happened this tour. They did throw away wickets. In fact, Michael Vaughan accused them of throwing in the towel. I completely agree with him. Some of those shots, yes, I know they're tail end batsmen, they're bowlers, you know, with the willow in hand, but they were swinging for the fences like they didn't care and not like they thought they had no hope, which they probably didn't, but you've got to dig in.
But when you look at it, Australia had the 146 run win in Hobart, which means they fell one wicket short of a 5-0 whitewash. And this test that we saw in Hobart was arguably England's worst performance, but this entire series, we just haven't seen any fight from them. And I must say, when Mark Wood got 6 for 37, I thought, ooh, this is going to give England a boost. They might actually take this. And then they didn't. And I just thought, yeah, that was a real shame.
Yeah, we'll be talking cricket throughout this morning. And it's Monday. That means heroes and villains as well. And we're taking your calls on the open line number 1353 53. The SMS is 0419 767 272. I reckon the cricket will throw up plenty of heroes and villains. I think the tennis will as well, won't they, with Novak Djokovic. And look, it's just been such a messy debacle over the last week and a half, but it does mean that Novak Djokovic has had his visa revoked, and that means he flew out of Tullamarine Airport last night at about 10:30 after his visa was cancelled. He flew out with his team. Goran Ivanisevic, his coach, was there as well. So the federal court ordered Djokovic to be deported from the company. You know, he was ordered to pay costs as well. That means he can't win his historic 21st Grand Slam down here in Australia this particular year. It also means that he could potentially be banned for the next 3 years of re-entering the country. There are certain circumstances where he can apply to the Australian government, you know, to possibly return. It's been messy. I don't think we've really got any answers at the moment at who's to blame. Okay, Novak Djokovic could have solved all of this by just being vaccinated and not trying to find loopholes into the country. But it's been messy, and I think tennis and this Australian Open tournament really has been the big loser so far.
How did it get to this, Ryan? How did it get to this stage after a week and a half and all these loopholes and everything like that? It's quite an indictment on, I suppose, not only Tennis Australia, but the different levels of government and bureaucracy in Australia that had all these different conflicting messages coming out. You could see the frustration with a lot of players over the course of the weekend, still being asked about Novak Djokovic. I think Andy Murray was quite frustrated visibly after a press conference from one of his matches in Sydney. I think Alex de Minaur wants us to get on with the tournament. So let's hope we can have a good tournament at Melbourne Park. Let's hope there's not too much unrest with the fans. It's going to be a pretty volatile atmosphere, you would have thought. Like Rod Laver Arena tonight, the Serbian opponent, Novak was supposed to play in the first round as well. So I'm just looking forward to watching some tennis, hopefully, and moving on.
Yeah, and as you know, Novak said he's obviously extremely disappointed and said he's been uncomfortable that all the focus has been all around him and now that we can all focus on the tennis. But the interesting reason why his visa was cancelled was, in the end, it was about him creating that anti-vax sentiment amongst people. It wasn't to do with the being medically exempt or the going down that path, but Immigration Minister Alex Hawke had said that it was centred around him being a risk to civil order and public health. So they had gone down that path, and that's why Novak's lawyers were trying to argue that that was not the right reason to be able to boot someone out of the country. But it was a unanimous decision by all three of the judges in the federal court. I actually tried to log on and watch the live stream yesterday. There was 80,000 people on there, and I did start, but I logged off after a little while.
Yeah, you know, the most disappointing part of this past week and a half is we've had two Australian tournament winners in Ash Barty winning in Adelaide last week and Tanasi Kokkinakis winning on Saturday night. That's not getting the headlines that it should.
I reckon, I think Tanasi Kokkinakis has had lots of
but
coverage.
Not what it should be getting, all because of this Novak Djokovic debacle.
But let's not, so Ash Barty had pulled out of her tournament last week, so we didn't see too much about that. And we were speaking about it quite a lot on the show when she won her tournament, but I feel like now we can shift and look and see what is going to be happening in the tennis world. And what about the luckiest loser, Salvatore Caruso from Italy? He's now been thrown into the spotlight. He's the tournament de facto number one seed. He slots in and takes over Novak Djokovic's spot.
I saw a stat doing the rounds last night. This is the first Grand Slam in Rafael Nadal's career that he's going to play without Novak Djokovic or Roger Federer. That's remarkable, isn't it? Yeah. Remarkable. To think about how long Nadal's been around. This is the first time he's going to play a Grand Slam without the other big two. So it opens up the men's draw, obviously. You're going to look to guys like Medvedev, I suppose, and Zverev. Nadal obviously become right into the picture. So it'll be a fascinating tournament, won't it?
We saw Andy Murray make the final of the Sydney International. Mm. Unfortunately, went out in straight sets. So, look, I'm not suggesting that he would challenge for the title. Obviously,
Wouldn't that be a fairy tale comeback
for
him?
Though.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we'll be talking tennis throughout this morning, and we'll update you who's on court at the Australian Open today as far as the Aussies are concerned. But a reminder, heroes and villains this morning, give us a call on the open line number 13 53 53. And if you do send us a text, make sure you stick your name on it as well, because we need to know where to send the prize pack if you are lucky enough to win heroes and villains this morning. That SMS number 0419 767 272. It's the Big Sports Breakfast Summer Edition with Jamie Rogers, Adam Pengelly and Ryan Phelan with you this morning.
We'll start with the back page of the Daily Telegraph. Wham, bam, thank you, Cam. Cameron Green has stamped his authority as the man to lead Australia to world domination after his tide-turning bowling humiliated England, who were 0 for 68 and starting to feel bullish in pursuit of 271 to win when Green giant dispatched the top three batsmen, and that's then sparked an avalanche of 10 to 56 to deliver a dazzling 4-0 Ashes triumph in Hobart.
Green on a green top. There in Hobart, he certainly was terrific. In the Australian, a big headline here from Todd Ballum and Robert Craddock. Tennis Australia boss Craig Tiley should resign after a failed bid to get Novak Djokovic around COVID rules. The article pretty much goes on to say that Craig Tiley was searching too hard to find a loophole for Novak to enter the country. And by and large, before all this happened, we saw, I think, Craig Tiley on every news channel promoting the Australian Open, and he's been really deathly silent throughout this whole debacle, hasn't he?
Well, the issue doesn't go away, does it, Ryan? Like, I know the tournament starts today, but Tennis Australia has still got some serious questions to answer about them trying to get these unvaccinated players across to play in the Australian Open at Melbourne Park, headlined, obviously, by Novak Djokovic. So it'll be interesting to see what Tennis Australia's response is in the coming days, whether they address it straight up on the first day of the tournament, get it out of the way, or they let it fester for a little while. But no doubt the board and Craig Tiley have some serious questions to answer.
And as a journalist, I'm sure you would agree that sometimes the best way to keep journalists at bay and not fueling a story is to talk, give them something, because if you don't, all journalists are going to do is dig deeper and go searching.
I've seen it so many times over the years, Ryan. It's not always easy managing a media issue. There's lots of different ways you can do it, but I'm a firm believer, if you get on the front foot, you talk about it, you address it straight away, you try and take the oxygen out of it from a story, from a media point of view, and often you don't see that. And you'll see people, media minders and clubs or whoever it might be, athletes, try and swat away an issue. But in some respects, it just keeps fueling the fire, because the journalists aren't going to stop talking about it or trying to investigate it, rather than just getting on the front foot and addressing it and getting your side of the story out there.
What's in the SMH this morning?
Embattled Novak joins Federer to lead chorus of Kokkinakis support. Sam Phillips writes that Novak Djokovic had plenty on his plate yesterday, but the embattled world number one still found time to join Roger Federer in messaging Tanasi Kokkinakis to congratulate him on his breakthrough win in Adelaide International. Kokkinakis broke his tour title maiden in front of friends and family in emotional scenes on Saturday night.
It was a nice touch, wasn't it? Those posts were shared by Tanasi Kokkinakis. I mean, look, I know he's someone that you would see in a locker room a lot, but gee, if you ever got a text message from Roger Federer, I don't care how close you are to him, you'd always, you know, get a bit of a pep in your step when you'd see a message from the GOAT, wouldn't you?
Well, especially considering how many injuries he's had in his career, and I think everyone on the tennis circuit and all of the viewers are just happy to see him back. He seems like such a nice, I was going to say kid, but he's 25, but it's nice to see him back. He's won his first singles title and he deserves to get all of the celebration text messages. It was just interesting. Novak messaged during the, when the court was adjourned, he's used his time then to send his congratulations text.
Yeah. And Tanasi Kokkinakis will be on court today at the Australian Open. In fact, I'll just update you what Aussies are playing and when this morning. So from 11 a.m. this morning, Alexander Vukic will take on Lloyd Harris from South Africa. That's just after 11 o'clock. James Duckworth will then take on Adrian Manarino from France. Tanasi Kokkinakis will take on Yannick Hanfmann from Germany. That one at about 5 o'clock this afternoon. John Millman will take on Feliciano Lopez. That is a tough first round matchup for him. Ila Tomjanovic will take on Paolo Bisotto from Spain. That's tonight on Margaret Court Arena. And Ash Barty, the world number one, will take the court tonight in the first round against Lysia Cyrenko from Ukraine. Plenty of live sport happening this morning. The wildcard playoffs are in the NFL. Currently, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are 17-0. Over Philadelphia Eagles. So we'll keep you updated with those NFL scores throughout the morning. And there's been plenty of sport happening across the last couple of days. We'll keep you updated as well. Graham Houston from the Avondale Golf Club will be joining us to talk about a special event for them. Roger Rashid will talk all things tennis with the Australian Open getting underway today. Brad Davidson hopefully will find a few winners for us when we talk racing a bit later. The great Mike Whitney, former Australian test bowler, will recap everything that's happened between Australia and England in this Ashes series. And Robbie Slater will talk the English Premier League and also the A-League. Plenty happening there. And of course, our heroes and villains this morning, we're asking for those from you, give us a call, 1353 53. You can SMS as well, 0419 767 272. Naturally, there's plenty of results to recap. The Melbourne Stars defeated the Brisbane Heat by 8 wickets in the BBL last night. Glenn Maxwell, if you get a chance and you didn't watch the match last night, get online and watch his spectacular catch there last night. It was superb to see him in full flight. In the football, Liverpool defeated Brentford 3-0 in the Premier League. Leeds defeated West Ham United 3-2. And Everton have sacked manager Rafa Benitez following a 2-1 defeat to Norwich City. In the golf, Jed Morgan, he created history with an 11-stroke victory in the PGA Championship at Royal Queensland Golf Club. We'll talk about that more in just a moment. Sue Oh, she claimed her first title in 7 years, winning by 4 shots in the Australian WPGA Championship. In the netball, the Australian Diamonds defeated the South Africans in the Quad Series at Copper Box Arena. Now, in the NFL, results from yesterday, Buffalo defeated the Patriots 47-17. Cincinnati down the Raiders 26-19. And there's a live game this morning with Tampa Bay taking on the Philadelphia Eagles. And Tom Brady's just running right there this morning. 17-0. Other games there today. Dallas take on San Francisco. That match just after 8:30. And after midday today, Kansas City will take on Pittsburgh. We're taking your heroes and villains this morning. The open line number 1353 53. SMS 0419 767 272. Jamie Rogers and Adam Pengelly with me this morning. Heroes and villains, we've got a lot to choose from this weekend.
Well, I had a few heroes I was going to go with, but I went with Tanasi Kokkinakis. I just loved the scenes where he kissed the court, his maiden ATP singles title, and let's all get behind him for a huge Australian Open campaign. Now, my villain, just sit back. I have to tell the story of my villain. It's Jetstar. Now, as everyone knows, Ruby Kisses was racing on the Gold Coast on Saturday. So I was doing the fly-in, fly-out because I had to work on Sunday morning. So I flew in. Yes, my flight was delayed. Traffic was horrific, but that was fine. I got to the track at 12:15. At 2 o'clock, I get an email from Jetstar saying, your flight's been cancelled at 6:30 tonight. I thought, oh, well, this is a problem. I rang Jetstar and they said, yeah, we've cancelled the rest of the day's flights. And I said, well, I need to get back to Sydney. What am I supposed to do? And they just said, well, there's nothing really. We don't have any other flights. So then I asked about Qantas. So anyway, while I was on hold, I was quickly scrolling through trying to find it, see if Virgin had any flights. All booked out. The gentleman on the phone came back and said, you can get on a Qantas flight. It's the last one, but it's at 3:45, which meant I had to leave the track right then at 2:15. I'd been there for 2 hours. Got to the airport at 3 o'clock. That was diabolical because my name wasn't down with Qantas. I was running between the Jetstar and Qantas desk. Anyway, ended up getting on the 3:45 flight. Didn't watch Ruby. We had Wi-Fi on the plane, but I wasn't able to watch Ruby, but I could randomly still see Instagram and get text messages. So Dave was texting me how it was going. I could see her in the mounting yard through Instagram. Disaster of a day. Disaster of a day.
Very much like just a celebrity appearance, isn't it? Just turning up, waving.
We joked. I went in, had a photo, walked around a little bit, and then left.
You've had some fun with that horse, though, Jamie. You've been to the Gold Coast twice now, albeit this time.
Well, she's gone to the Gold Coast twice. We didn't get to go last year, and then this year I just popped up for just a quick photo, and I didn't even see her. Not even in stalls or anything.
You know, we wanted her to get that bonus, but it wasn't to be.
She's still got some bonus. Yep. But yeah, so in our head, it would have been nice if she'd beaten Glorious Ruby over the line, which was the other all-female owned syndication, but not to be. And I do think the circumstances with Ruby, and don't get me wrong, I know Adam's here starting to smirk. I don't have my owner's rose-coloured glasses on, but I do think that the circumstances in her case was the barrier. If Glorious Ruby and Ruby Kisses had flipped barriers, it would have been a totally different story. I'm not saying she would have won the race, but I think she would have done a lot better. It was a very tough race.
Did you buy into any more yearlings last week? Have you gone into any more?
No, I haven't, but our syndication manager, Phil, was up there and I said, look, if you've spotted any that you think is a potential superstar, keep me posted. Okay.
Well, you're in the running for the prize pack, Jamie. That's a good start to heroes and villains. That'll be hard to beat. What do you got for us, Adam?
My hero this week, Ryan, is going to be a little bit left field. Have you heard about this story with David Milan from the Test match over in Hobart? His wife, Claire, gave birth while he was batting in the first innings down there at Hobart.
I've missed that.
And the baby came 6 weeks early, which was 6 weeks premature, the baby. So obviously I think they probably planned the birth and the pregnancy around him fitting in between cricket tours, as a lot of professional athletes do these days. Fortunately or unfortunately, it depends which way you look at it. He couldn't be there for the birth, and his wife gave birth while he was out there in the middle batting in the first innings at Hobart.
Congratulations.
So what a crazy, crazy story. So he's my hero, and his wife Claire, my hero, a little bit left field this week. And my villain is going to be Craig Tiley in Tennis Australia. I don't think need too much explanation after what's happened the last week or so. They've got plenty of questions to answer, I think.
Yeah, and we'll talk to Roger Rashid about tennis, and we'll ask him about Craig Tiley a little bit later as well. My hero and villains, I'm going to go with the captaincy theme. And my hero is Pat Cummins. I know there was, you know, a lot of debate over who should be the new Australian captain in the lead up to this Test series. And I think he's led in a really fine way, this Australian cricket team. Sure, there was some criticism over his captaincy in the Sydney Test. But by and large, I don't think there were too many blemishes with his effort. I think he's been terrific with the media. So he's my hero. My villain with the captaincy theme is Virat Kohli. The Indian Test captain, or we should now say former Test captain, because he stood down after what was, I think, could only be described as a petulant display against South Africa, where there was a DRS review. And the DRS review, I don't know what technology they were using because it was wrong. And I think, you know, they probably had every right to be miffed because there was an LBW decision that didn't go their way, that should have gone their way. And then on stump mic, he literally leant over the stumps and criticised the host broadcaster pretty much of cheating, or at least showing vision unfavourably of the Indians and not so of South Africa. It really was, I thought, a pretty disappointing display of how to represent not just your team, but also your country.
Well, his power base has been eroded, hasn't it, Ryan, within Indian cricket? He was this just demigod for so long, and the last sort of 6 months or so, the BCCI seemed to be wresting more power away from him. They took away the white ball captaincy from him, and now he's given up the Test captaincy. So, and Virat hasn't been the batter that we've seen the last couple of years. I think he's scored a Test century for a while now. He's only averaging less than 30 the last couple of years. So he's got plenty of work to do on his batting. Just back on Pat Cummins very briefly, Ryan. I thought it was a really poignant moment after the match there last night when they had the presentation. And Usman Khawaja ducked off stage at one stage when they were about to spray the champagne due to his Islamic faith.
Yes.
And Pat said, no, boys, stop. and called Usman back to come back for the team photo. I thought that said volumes about Pat Cummins, the type of person he is.
Yeah, it's a good observation. And, you know, I think we mentioned it last week, didn't we, Jamie, with Stu Clark, and we can't underestimate the undertaking of a captain, an Australian captain, just with their duties away from the cricket team, in particular with the media. It's a laden responsibility, and I think he handles it pretty well.
Oh, absolutely. I think he's done a brilliant job. And as you said, the only slight blemish, which according to whoever you spoke to at that time, was whether he declared too late in Sydney. But all in all, he's done an outstanding job. And I think it's his first time as a test captain. He was brilliant.
So that's our heroes and villains. What about yours? Give us a call on the open line number 1353 53, the SMS 0419 767 272. We have a prize pack to give away as well. Looking at some of the texts coming through. Good morning, team. Heroes, the Australian cricket team is my hero, and the villain, Jemaya, for stopping Uncle Laurie's multi. That's Dave from Newcastle. Oh. That's right, Jamie, because we got Uncle Laurie to come in for the multi. He gave us a $10 multi. We needed Sentimental, who was your tip, Adam, during the week, to run in the top four at Sydney. That happened. Mm-hmm. But Jemaya unfortunately didn't deliver.
Yeah, and it was a popular multi as well. Our listeners got on board with that, and I messaged Uncle Laurie after and just said that was an unfortunate result. But it was, yeah, I mean, we had actually quite a lot of callers and text messages yesterday. And Adam, what did you think? It was all just slamming Tommy Berry on board Jemaya.
Yeah, I've watched the replay a few times, Jamie. And to be fair, once she didn't jump that well, and she copped a bit of a squeeze at the start there, and he virtually had no option to be shunted back towards the fence. Mm. And he had a lap full of horse in the straight. You could see that, but she had absolutely nowhere to go. It's racing. It happens.
Mm. Yep.
I know it's unfortunate. I know it's a $2 million race. I know probably plenty of people back to there on Saturday, but that happens. When you've got horses that settle midfield or second half of the field, they're going to need some luck, and she got none of it up there on the weekend.
So we will have a multi again this week. So we'll see if Uncle Laurie wants to put his hand up again, or Adam, Ryan, we'll have a multi this week. So for our listeners, get set, and we'll work it out during the week. So here for more heroes and villains, this one here from Steve from Woi Woi, Paul Gow. Now, this is a good one.
Yes.
So Paul Gowie tipped Jed Morgan, who was paying $51 for the win. As we know, Jed got the win, and Steve has put the villain himself for not taking up Gowie's tip. And Steve, I must admit, I had the exact same thought this morning when I saw the results. I thought, damn, I didn't listen to Gowie. And he's got a good strike rate, Gowie.
I reckon Gowie's got about a year of credits in the bank now after picking the 51 winner, don't you think? Mm.
We had a really good week last week with the tips, didn't we? Tim Clark delivered. You and Brad Davidson were on fire. I think Robbie Slater did pretty well with the football as well, and Paul Gow, as you mentioned, so it pays to listen on the Big Sports Breakfast.
Heroes and Villains, this is coming in from Peter. Hero, the pilot who steered the plane with Djokovic in it out of Tullamarine, and the villain, the pilot who brought him in. He's quite succinct there, Peter.
Oh, goodness me. It's just been an absolute debacle, hasn't it? What have we got here? So this one, morning guys, heroes has to be the Aussie cricket team for an emphatic Ashes series win. Villains, the English cricket team for looking like they wanted to get on Novak Djokovic's flight last night. Yeah, that's a good one. That's Para Todd. You know, I guess it is disappointing for tennis fans. Like, I know your brother Tim, for example, Jamie, is going down to the Australian Open with his son Harry.
Yeah.
And they are massive tennis fanatics. Mm. And they are bitterly disappointed that they can't see Novak Djokovic. And Harry, a young tennis fan, would love to see Novak. So, yes, I know we're debating, you know, whether or not he should be playing, but there are a lot of tennis fans out there that are bitterly disappointed that Novak won't be at the Australian
Open. And as you said, I know that my nephew Harry, he loves Novak and will wear the same clothes that Novak is wearing. So that's disappointed for them. But you know what? It all just comes down to the fact that Novak did the wrong thing. And we've got to remember, there was other players like Stefanos Tsitsipas, Medvedev, Zverev, like they all were hesitant to get the vaccine and they all went and got the jab because they said that they knew that that was the rules to play in Australia and probably elsewhere in the world as well. And also it was interesting that within months of the Australian Open starting, the vaccination rate amongst the tennis players in the Australian Open went from 50% to 97%. Mm-hmm. So every other player knew that's the rules, that's how we play at the Australian Open, so let's go get the jab.
As much as I agreed he shouldn't have been in the country, there was just a small part of me just wanted to see the theatre of him playing and see how it handled the crowd and the hostility would come from the Australian fans and this world against me mentality. I agree he probably shouldn't have been come to Australia in the first place, but after he was here, I thought, okay, this is going to be fascinating to watch to see how this plays out if he does win his court challenge and does line up at Melbourne Park, but obviously not to happen.
Well, it's the litmus test, really, for what happens for Novak in the future, not just here in Australia, because at the moment, you know, he's going to need a special exemption, I suppose, from the Australian government to return, because with the conditions of the visa, it's 3 years.
Do you reckon he'd want to come back?
Of course, yes. Yeah,
will
it's his tournament.
Will he want to come back? Do you reckon he will genuinely want to come back?
His language around his statement, I think, has been very positive about the tournament itself and also the Australian fans. I think he will want to come back because he needs Novak Djokovic. I believe his legacy, you know, on a human level, he will never be better than Roger Federer and also Rafa Nadal. Mm. But he wants that record.
But he's so humiliated. Like, this is such a humiliating experience. And he's basically brought ridicule to Australia. So I'd be very interested to see if he's going to apply to come back.
This, Jamie, has gone right around the world. So a lot of other border controls right around the world will also be looking at how we've handled it and maybe asking similar questions if they have certain rules in place as well. So maybe it won't just be Australia that's taking the hard line against Novak Djokovic. Other places may as well. So we'll see what happens with that. It's the heroes and villains that we are asking for you this morning, from you this morning. The open line number 1353 53, and give us an SMS as well, 0419 767 272. Well, it was a record-breaking win at the Australian PGA by Jed Morgan. 22 under par, winning by 11 shots. Quite an extraordinary effort, beating a talented field of Australian golfers. And at Avondale Golf Club, each and every year, they hold an amateur event, which incidentally, in 2020, was won by Nathan Barbieri, who was in the Australian PGA, and he finished in a tie for 31st at 2 under. So it certainly does unearth some terrific talent for the future. Last year's event, sadly, was cancelled due to COVID, but we're back in 2022. The Avondale Amateurs begin on Tuesday, which is tomorrow, and finishes on Friday this week. So looking forward to it. And to tell us a little bit more, we say good morning to Graham Houston, the president from Avondale Golf Club. Good morning, Graham.
Yeah, hi, guys. Great to talk to you.
Yeah, great to talk to you as well. The event's back after being missed by COVID, so I'm sure you're looking forward to it.
Yeah, very much so. It's these events are so important for the young amateur golfers in their careers, and it was devastating last year when we had to cancel, but yeah, this year it was like, even if we just get the tournament done, all of the things that go on around it, we can miss, but we have to get the tournament done, and we've got a great field. That was the key determinant. You know, would we get enough and a quality field? And this year's field, it's oversubscribed. Just give you a sense of the depth of Australian golf this year. The men's cutoff was 0.6. So we've got 120 men's participants with a handicap of better than 0.6. There's 12 of them that are playing off plus four or better. And these guys are amateurs. It's like amazing. Mm. And the female field is just as strong. We've got 48 women, and they've got a handicap of, and it's half of them are better than Sprout. So, yeah, it bodes well for Australian golf when you see that kind of quality in the amateur fields.
Well, Graham, out of those huge fields, who are some of the golfers that we should keep an eye on?
Well, you know, in the field this week, we've got Harrison Crowe and Janeth Wong. Both of them just won the Masters of the Amateur in Victoria last week. And we've got the runners up as well. So in the field, both of those guys are there. We've got 16 members from Avondale and club champion Chris Fang, who we've got as a hot favourite, Jai Pickin, and back from the US, are a couple of our emotional favourites. Having 16 from the club that actually made the cutoff is also pretty exciting. I think having that depth of talent fighting it out, and particularly when you're an amateur, this is kind of, these events are where you you cut your teeth and you get a break. This is your opportunity.
Graham, we've seen former Prime Minister John Howard's been a regular guest at the tournament over the last few years and presenting the trophies to the winners. How has that association come about with him?
John's a member here. So, John's a member of Avondale and a regular golfer. He really enjoys the golf. He comes out he won't profess to ever making the cut for an event like this, but... He very much enjoys the getting out on the course and just being a golfer and not anything special, just one of the guys. And I think that's what he likes about Avondale. Mm. Avondale's got this tradition of roll-up start, so you can't book a tee time, outside of COVID times, but we don't book tee times. You just roll up and join the next group that's going out. So it's it very much levels everybody, and you get to play with whoever happens to be on the tee next, and it's a fantastic way to meet the membership. And I think John enjoys that part of the club.
As I mentioned, Graham, the event starts tomorrow and finishes on Friday. How can the public get involved and come along? Obviously, bearing in mind we are in COVID times.
Yeah, look, that's our only concern. The thing about the golf is incredibly safe. You're outdoors, and as long as you stay outdoors, you can follow the event. And teeing off, they just warm up day to day, so they're teeing off now. For the first 2 days, they're teeing off at 6:45, and the second tee at 11 o'clock. And so they'll be playing solidly on Tuesday, Wednesday, through till about 5:30. And then on the final days, we should be finished. The tee rounds on Friday will be finishing around 4 o'clock on Friday. So more than welcome to come out and follow some of the young talent from Australia.
The stars,
which is the lead.
Yeah, the stars of the future of golf in Australia will be on display. Thanks for your time this morning, Graham, and best of luck with the event returning this year. And appreciate your time this morning on the Big Sports Breakfast.
Excellent. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.